I'm Michael Holly in for Bill Littlefield. This past season, for the first time ever, some NBA teams wore sponsors' logos on their jerseys. The Boston Celtics wore a General Electric patch. Only a game's Gary Wallach, a lifelong Celtics fan, was not happy about that. He once owned a GE clock radio, VCR, and refrigerator. None of them worked very well, so he considered that to be the worst sports sponsorship deal ever, until recently, when he heard about this one.
Heinz Weifenbach was a successful real estate developer who loved ice hockey. In 1981, he bought ECD Iserlohn, a team in Germany's elite Bundesliga. The team was not very good, and it was millions of dollars in debt. Ice hockey wasn't exactly Germany's favorite sport. Over the next few years, Weifenbach sank money into the team, and by 1986, ECD Iserlohn was a playoff contender. That endeared him to Iserlohn's small but loyal group of hockey fans and to his players.
Heinz Weifenbach, he was a character.
That's Earl Spry, one of the many former ECD Iserlohn players from Canada.
Big, heavy-set guy. He always had his big, long leather coat on, and he almost looked like a guy out of the Gestapo, Hogan Cereals or something, and his long, wavy hair and a walrus mustache. You know, that was Heinz.
Weifenbach's dream was for his team to win the league championship, and he let his players know about it. And one time, one of his players fired back, crudely. During a game early in the 1987-1988 season, Iserlohn was losing 6-0 to a team it should have been beating. Defenseman Dan Olsen says Heinz walked into the locker room during the first intermission.
He was giving us the gears about how we were playing, and then he said, if you guys continue to play this way, I'm going to shoot you guys, as he pulled his gun out.
Most of the players knew Heinz was joking, but the team's top scorer, Danny Held, was not amused.
Told him if he ever pulled that thing out again, he was going to shove his stick up his butt and he wouldn't be able to breathe. I think he was a little scared of Danny Held.
But Heinz was probably more afraid of his creditors, according to Iserlohn forward Bruce Hardy.
He always carried a gun with him, wherever he went.
Like many of Germany's elite pro hockey teams of the mid-1980s, ECD Iserlohn was always looking for more sponsors, even though its uniforms were covered with logos. Again, Dan Olsen.
We had a beer company, Iserlohner Pilsner. One of our major sponsors owned a crystal company, Ritzenhof Crystal. BMW was one of our sponsors as well. I think that was on our helmets.
But all those sponsorships didn't generate enough income to pay the bills. The team also owed about $3.5 million in back taxes. By the fall of 1987, Heinz Weifenbach was desperate to keep his team solvent. Journalist Gabriel Luis Manga says that led Weifenbach to hire some expert help.
Heinz's personal tax man. They called him Merlin the Magician.
Players were getting paid for the most part, but Germany's central tax office was not. Officials knew that ECD Iserlohn was playing games with its ledgers. They just weren't exactly sure how. So they went after the players.
They're young Canadian guys in their 20s. They're just trying to continue a dream. They're having success. They're getting paid to do what they love. And then all of a sudden, the tax authorities are at their doors going through their apartments.
Bruce Hardy was good at sneaking out a back window when the feds came calling. But one day, they caught up with him.
They took my football, my baseball glove, my leather jacket, a TV, and right at that time in 87, the Looney came out and my brother had brought me one over.
The Looney is a Canadian $1 coin bearing the image of a loon. It's made mostly of nickel with a shiny bronze plating. In 1987, it was worth about 67 U.S. cents.
And they thought it was a piece of gold. They took it, too.
German tax officials were also looking for documents that might show them how Weifenbach was hiding income from them. The team responded by warning players to misplace their pay stubs and bank statements. The German government tightened the screws even more.
There's times when we come out of the rink and our cars would be taken away. They'd have a big trailer out there loading our cars up on them and take them away.
The finance people locked all the doors to the dressing room and told us we weren't allowed to practice and we weren't going to be allowed to play again until some of this money was paid back.
But the team needed to play to avoid bankruptcy. And Weifenbach couldn't stonewall the feds forever. He looked far and wide for creative financing, maybe a really big sponsorship deal. He reached out to Hans Meyer, the mayor of the nearby town of Hamer, again, Gabriel Luis Manga.
Hans was notorious for his business dealings behind the Eastern Bloc in China, and so he was the kind of guy who could get help through some interesting business partners.
Burgermeister Meyer had in mind one very interesting partner.
Hans Meyer goes, "I've got it. We're going to call out Muammar Gaddafi."
Muammar Gaddafi, known sponsor of international terrorism, the man who ordered the 1986 bombing of a Berlin discotheque that killed three and wounded more than 200, oppressor of millions of Libyans, dictator of the country that supplied most of Germany's oil.
And so Heinz, he says, "Great, make the call. Let's go talk to Gaddafi."
Heinz jetted to Tripoli in late November of 1987.
And there's this whole spectacle of getting off the plane on the tarmac in Libya. And there's dancers and Bedouin tents, classic Gaddafi party. Heinz is wining and dining with Gaddafi. Gaddafi says, "You know, we don't have ice here, but I've seen hockey, and, you know, it seems like people like hockey in Germany, and Gaddafi likes anything that pleases the public. He's a man of the people."
Not really. Gaddafi was reviled in Libya, Germany, and elsewhere. But that didn't deter Heinz Weifenbach.
Heinz goes to Gaddafi's compound that's been bombed.
The U.S. had bombed Tripoli in 1986 in retaliation for the Berlin bombing. Two of the dead there had been U.S. soldiers.
And Gaddafi gives him a contract for almost $1 million to save the team.
Heinz returned to Germany and met with the players. He told them,
"Hey guys, guess what? Good news. The tax authorities aren't going to be raiding your apartments anymore. You might even get your leather coats and your loonies and your baseball gloves back. And we're going to be playing and we're going to get a shot to win the championship."
Heinz presented the team with their new jerseys. They were Iserlohn's familiar blue and white design, minus the Ritzenhof crystal logo on the front.
It just had this great big green book on the front of it. It said Das Grüne Buch in German, which meant the Green Book, and M. Gaddafi on it.
Gaddafi's Green Book had first been published 12 years earlier, in 1975.
He said all we had to do was wear Muammar's advertisement of his Green Book for 5 or 6 games, then we would get the money. So we kind of looked around the room at each other and a little bit aghast that Muammar Gaddafi was going to be our major sponsor.
And we're kind of going, wow, this is some crazy stuff going on here.
Hardy, Olsen, and Spry say they had no idea what was in Gaddafi's Green Book, and they really didn't care, at least not at first. They were hockey players, and hockey players just want to play hockey. But why would Muammar Gaddafi want to advertise on the uniforms of German hockey players?
Gaddafi had ambitions beyond just being the leader of Libya.
Daniel Calder is an expert in the literature of dictators.
He had global ambitions very early on, and he declared the arrival of the third universal theory that was going to replace communism and capitalism. He says that capitalism doesn't work, democracy is a fraud, socialism likewise. So this is the solution to the global problem of how to organize and govern a society.
But how did Gaddafi think that would work?
Yeah, so, you know, he was kind of sparse on the details. I don't think he thought about it that heavily. It's a tricky book to read because it's quite rambling and it doesn't maintain a very clear argument.
Among the Green Book's gems are Gaddafi's creative analogy between nationalism and gaseous stars and his lengthy list of the biological differences between men and women. And he shares his contempt for sports fans. He says,
"The thousands who crowd stadiums to view, applaud, and laugh are those foolish people who have failed to carry out the activity themselves."
Gaddafi enforced the study of the Green Book at various centers around Libya.
You can imagine sitting in a classroom in Libya or a university, and this is presented to you, and woe betide the person who laughed at these kind of bizarre statements.
And here's where a German pro ice hockey team comes in.
He was still trying to find ways to reach the world. Because he had the home audience sewn up, he didn't have to worry about them, but clearly that wasn't enough.
On December 4th, 1987, ECD Iserlohn took the ice in their home arena against Rosenheim SB. Bruce Hardy and his teammates wore their brand new Green Book jerseys. Fans had found out about the new sponsorship beforehand.
People are going wild, dressed up as Gaddafi in sort of Bedouin garb.
And it was just electric in there, and I'm going, wow, this is changing things here real quick.
6,000 spectators had somehow been crammed into an arena with a capacity of only 4,900. Iserlohn won the game. It looked like Weifenbach might finally get his first championship. And now everybody was paying attention, including international news media. It seemed to the players that all the publicity was good publicity. But Heinz was fighting with the German Ice Hockey Federation, which wanted to nix the Green Book sponsorship. And then, for its next game, ECD Iserlohn traveled to Frankfurt, where thousands of U.S. troops were stationed. When the team bus pulled up to the arena, Dan Olsen looked out the window.
We were met with a hostile mob of people, and, you know, they all had their signs, and they thought that we were devils for playing for this guy and advertising his book.
Before the game, the commander of an anti-terrorism unit told Earl Spry,
"You know, we've had bomb threats, and we've gone through the whole rink, and we found nothing. We've got dogs and everything. Pretty sure it's safe, but we can't guarantee anything."
In the locker room, the players told Heinz that they had serious doubts about wearing the Green Book logo.
And Heinz said, "Listen, guys, if you don't wear the jerseys, the money is not going to come through and the season's going to be canceled."
We just took a vote, and I think it was fairly unanimous. We just said, "No, we're not going to wear them." That was it.
The team told Heinz about their decision.
He just kind of looked at us and he went, "Okay." Then he walked out of the room.
He was disappointed because, you know, I mean, he wanted to keep that team together. He wanted to keep his butt out of jail too, right? So,
on December 6, 1987, ECD Iserlohn played in its old jerseys. Gaddafi withheld payment, and the team declared bankruptcy a few days later. The team was dissolved. Heinz was crushed. So were hockey fans in Iserlohn. But Earl Spry wasn't.
To be honest with you, I was relieved that it ended. I was sad for the fans, but I wanted to go someplace and just concentrate on my hockey and get that behind me, put it in my past.
Spry played 11 more seasons in Germany. He's now a PGA pro there. Bruce Hardy played 13 more seasons and is now a golf pro in Edmonton. Dan Olsen is head coach of the men's hockey team at the Southern Alberta Institute of Technology. Heinz Weifenbach managed to dodge German tax officials long enough to resurface as chairman of Sauerland ECD, a team in Germany's third-tier ice hockey league. Sauerland won a title in 1989. Weifenbach's championship dream had finally been realized. He resigned 2 years later. 2 years after that, he began serving a 27-month prison sentence for tax evasion. He died in early 2015. Libyans were unburdened of Gaddafi's regime in 2011. Daniel Calder says that was more or less the end of the Green Book.
There was nobody saying, "Oh, let's hang on to the Green Book. It contains truth." This is common with a lot of regimes. These books are there and then they're just... It's like people don't even want to revile them. They just want to forget them.
Only two Green Book jerseys are known to have survived. One is in the German Ice Hockey Hall of Fame in Augsburg. The other lives in one of Bruce Hardy's closets. He doesn't take it out very often.
Only a Game's Gary Wallach brought us that story. 20 years ago, Pat Gallant Charette's idea of exercise was walking around the block.
The first time I was able to swim 1 hour nonstop freestyle, I got out of that pool as though I had won the gold medal.
Now, Pat holds 6 world records in marathon swimming. Her story's coming up on Only a Game. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Only a Game NPR.